So we're at 10:15. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to day four of TechEd. My name is Mahendra Sekaran. I'm a group program manager in the Link engineering team. And I've been working on Link since the time it was called Live Communication Server, like 7, 8 years ago. And I've been kind of with the product, working on the voice infrastructure for the past 7+ years. So I'm very excited to be here, and I feel honored and privileged to have the opportunity to talk to you guys about what are the considerations you need to have when you plan large voice deployments. So in terms of a quick agenda, here are the topics that we'll cover. I'll walk you through several topology options that you have in terms of deploying Link 2010. So there are different businesses of different sizes with different resiliency and availability needs. So we have different combinations of topology that should allow you to meet your needs. And one of the biggest things when you deploy a workload like voice is that it's enterprise critical. Voice always working with high quality is very important for the business to be functioning and for your end users to be satisfied. And one of the infrastructure layers that directly influences the quality of experience is your network. So I'll spend a little bit of time talking about what are the considerations you need to have in terms of planning for your network, in terms of bandwidth, latency, quality of service, etc. So it should give you some insights to that. There are a few features that we've done in Link 2010 that specifically address interoperability. This is when you interoperate with an existing PBX system or when you're interoperating with your local exchange carrier, your PSTN provider, because they have unique numbering requirements. And in the past, it wasn't very easy to configure Link to be able to work well with those systems. And we've actually done some features to actually address them. And I will not be covering all the voice features that we have in Link 2010 because Jamie earlier in the week had a session where he kind of presented all the different voice features that we have. And one other thing I will not be covering from a voice planning perspective, which is a very important piece, is how do you configure dial plans and routing. My colleague Cornel, I had a session, I think, the day before or yesterday, I don't recall, where he actually walked you through how to plan for dial plans and how do you configure routing so that when you have a very distributed deployment that you take the best path in terms of from a cost perspective or from a experience perspective. I'll spend some time talking about IP-PBX interop. Pretty much every business out there today probably has a PBX, and this is focused on IP-PBX, but it can be easily extended to your traditional PBX systems as well. And we at Microsoft totally acknowledge that, we don't expect our customers to just rip your existing equipment and put in Link and, give us a thumbs up. This deployment is going to happen over a period of time. And during that period of time, we want to make sure that our product provides a good experience in terms of interoperating with your existing user base. There's a few investments we made in Link 2010, which actually makes this interoperability much more efficient. And of course, in addition to audio, video is top of mind for everybody as well. So we'll kind of cover, what are the options available to you in terms of video interop. So at the end of the session, the key takeaways is in addition to understanding which topology will work best for you, you should have enough information about what are the considerations you need to have when you deploy enterprise voice in a greenfield deployment or also like when you want to interop with an existing PBX. And then the reason the greenfield environment is interesting is there are a lot of our customers who actually start off with Link when they start up a new site, when they buy a new location, say in Brussels, they open up a new location. Rather than wiring that office for a traditional PBX system, they just go start off with Link over there. And so it provides a very easy migration path. So this is a very simplified view of the topology. I didn't want to throw a very complicated Visio diagram yet. There'll be a few more that follow later. So there's two main offerings of the Link Enterprise Server. So we have what's called a standard edition, which is all the server roles that we have is consolidated in one box. So it is a very easy way to get up and running very quickly. So it's a single box install that should provide all your IAM presence, conferencing, and voice needs. Then we have an enterprise edition. Enterprise edition is a much more scalable deployment option where you have several servers that you can deploy, and depending on your conferencing workload, you can choose to deploy a separate server for it, or you can, you know, consolidate everything. So the just in terms of terminology, we have like, you know, three or four main server roles. The front-end server is the heart of the Link system. So this is a server that takes care of authenticating the user, which allows the user to register with the system. It takes care of all the routing, and it takes care of all the IAM and presence needs for the user. So you'll hear the term user services, and user services runs on the front-end. And the back-end, as the name implies, is pretty much the database back-end server that we use to share state when you have a pool of servers. And audio-video conferencing, there's a role called audio-video MCU, which is multi-point control unit. So anytime you have more than two people involved in a call, the audio and video gets mixed and gets distributed to all the participants. And the server that takes care of that function is the audio-video conferencing server. In a typical deployment, even if you choose the Enterprise Edition, we do allow, you know, co-location of the server as part of the front-end server role, so you don't need to get a separate physical server installed for this. But once your deployment goes over 10,000 users, we recommend that you have a separate audio-video conferencing server. And the reason is processing media is very intensive from a CPU and a memory perspective, and you do not want to impact the other core workloads of Link by running audio-video on the same server role. The edge server, if you need remote user connectivity for people who are outside your intranet or outside your corporate network to access Link, without doing a VPN, the edge server is the one that basically enables that function. And the edge server gets deployed in the demilitarized zone, so it protects your internal network from the internet. And one, you know, key value prop, I was in Enterprise Connect in Orlando a few months ago, and this is like one of the major conferences for enterprise communications, and there was a lot of customers very excited about a capability that we offer in Link called Federation. So Federation is the ability for you to communicate with another business who's running Link without, you know, without going through the legacy networks. So there's about, I don't know, it's about 5,000 customers, I think, who are in our Federation directory today. So which basically means about 5,000 of these customers can talk to each other and have a very rich experience. It's not just talking. When you use Link, you get the full unified communication stack. So they can instant message each other. They can see their presence. They can do a video call. They can do data collaboration. And the edge server is a role that facilitates the connectivity across enterprises as well. So that's another critical role the edge server plays. The servers in the bottom over there are Exchange UM. The Exchange UM is our Exchange Unified Messaging Server, which provides the voicemail capabilities as part of our solution. And SCOM, of course, is Microsoft System Center, and it helps you kind of monitor how your Link deployment is performing. On the right, we have a set of optional servers, and then the reason they're optional is several large deployments, particularly when you deploy workload like voice, some of these may become mandatory, but you do have a choice of deploying or not deploying. Mediation server is a role that has existed in Link since OCS. But in Link 2010, one major change that we've done is we allow you the ability to co-locate the mediation server with the front end. And there is a certain technology called media bypass, which I'll be talking about later, which enables that to happen. And the takeaway for you over here on that particular point is, in the past, in OCS 2007, we required a mediation server to be deployed in every branch location. because you wanted to provide an optimal media experience, and you want the mediation server as close to the end user as possible. And that resulted in, you know, like in a deployment like Microsoft, where we have over 100,000 users enabled for enterprise voice with Link, we had like in the order of 100-plus mediation servers in our deployment. By them moving to Link 2010, they're able to cut it down to like a handful of mediation servers. There are certain scenarios where a standalone mediation server will still be needed, and this is when you have a SIP trunking with a SIP trunking provider. Given that there's certain protocol requirements we have for media bypass, a standalone mediation server will be needed. But we are working with all the leading SBC vendors, so they will be adopting the technology. So in the future, we don't expect this to be even required from an optional perspective. Then there's a few other servers. I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about each of them because that's not the topic of this session. Group chat, if you want to have a group chat conversation, archiving. Monitoring, I think, is an interesting role from a voice perspective because the monitoring server is where all your call detail records and QoE records. QoE records are quality of experience records, get aggregated. And reports. There's several reports that we kind of ship out of box to help you kind of monitor how healthy your Link deployment is. How many of you know about QoE metrics in Link or OCS? Okay, a handful of people. So maybe it's worth explaining that. QoE stands for quality of experience. At the end of every audio or video call, the Link endpoints actually submit metrics to the server. So Link user A calls Link user B. When the call gets completed, both of them submit metrics about the quality of the call. The metrics are all your network layer characteristics of the media stack observed. So at the end of the call, we'll collect metrics about what is the packet loss, what is the jitter, what is the latency, and there's something called MOS, which is mean opinion score, which is an aggregated view of the quality of the call. So all these metrics get collected, and they get reported up to the monitoring server, and the monitoring server can have, you know, reporting based on location. So if during a particular time of day, if users in Amsterdam are calling London, and for calls for that particular location to on that particular WAN link is having a lower quality, admins can get alerted to it and basically work with the networking team to fix any network issues between those two sites. And that's the value the QoE reports and the reporting that we build on top of monitoring server provide. The director is another optional role. It just provides, you can think of the director as an authentication engine that determines the right machine a user is homed in and then routes it to the, it's almost like a proxy with authentication. That's what director does. From an overall deployment model, actually one change we've done in Link 2010 from OCS 2007, we introduced this notion of sites. In the past, the notion of site was not really built into the topology. Now the Link topology is very site-aware. So you have the notion of central sites, which are, you can think about them as your data center sites, and the central sites have several pools deployed, enterprise edition pools or standard edition servers. And then you have branch sites, and every branch site has affinity to one central site. So if I take an example, you could have a data center in Amsterdam, and all of Western Europe could be branch sites, you know, connecting up to the data center in Amsterdam. And the reason that is important is I think Paul had a session yesterday on high availability and resiliency. For us to determine who is your backup server, we use the central site branch site hierarchy. And the other thing this hierarchy helps you with is in terms of policy assignment. You can actually have more control in terms of the granularity of policy assignment now with Link. And you can choose to assign a policy globally, which means for all users in a deployment, they get the same policy. You can choose to do it on a per-site basis or on a per-user basis. So, you know, particularly since we talked about the network, if things like if you have a WAN connection that is constrained or it's not, doesn't have enough capacity, for the users in that particular site or for some of the users in that particular site, you can decide to turn off video. And so the hierarchy that we actually built into Link 2010 gives you a lot of flexibility in terms of policy assignment. So I'll step you through three reference topologies. And the reference topologies are kind of site, the typical deployment when you have, based on the number of users and based on what your needs are. What you see now is components that are needed in your deployment that are non-link, that are not link components. So you have Active Directory, you have Exchange, and you have a reverse proxy to, you know, route your web traffic. And this most enterprises have. And if you're a small location, you know, like 5,000 or 6,000 users, and if you need to enable Link Voice, all you pretty much need is a standard edition server, which is the server that I talked about, where all the server roles are consolidated into one physical install. And you'll have a PSTN gateway if you need connectivity to the PSTN, or you can actually do direct SIP to a PBX that connects you to a PSTN. And on the left over there, the Edge server. The Edge server, like I said before, if you need remote user connectivity, so people are at home and are wanting to make and receive audio calls or participate in conferences, then the Edge server can be deployed. On the top right over there, the Survivable Branch Appliance. This is if you are in a branch, if you have a branch location, and you want to provide highly available voice to users in that location, which is resilient to the WAN connection to the data center, then you can deploy a SBA. So you know, from this figure, it's fairly easy to see that a simple deployment for about a few thousand users is not very complex at all. And we have a lot of customers actually in the 300-400 user range who actually decide to go with the standard edition approach because it's very simple to install and very easy to manage. And actually, in the one point I want to call out, which is again an enhancement in Link 2010, we did a lot of investments in Link 2010 so that resiliency is built into the system. So there's no single point of failure. In the past, when you had a standard edition server deployment, when that standard edition server is taken down for patching or for maintenance, all your users lost service. But in Link 2010, we actually have the failover capabilities, so we can fail over and offer all the critical workloads even when during maintenance. So one very simple high, HA option is to basically have two standard edition boxes that are paired with each other, with one being the primary and the other being the secondary. So when the primary goes down, the clients will automatically fail over to the secondary server. So this is a slightly more complicated deployment. So it's a single data center install, but it is for about 100,000 users. So if you have like 80, 90,000 users, you can actually decide to deploy the enterprise edition. So right now you see the front end pool, which is like a pool of servers. You can have up to 8 machines in a front end pool. The director is there, and there's a gateway for PSTN connectivity. If you need audio video conferencing, at this scale, about 100,000 users or 90,000 users, you can actually decide to deploy AV conferencing pool. And the monitoring pool is deployed for monitoring. The reason that the number of machines is just 2 in the front-end pool and each of the machines and each of the other pools is mainly for high availability, and each front-end machine can handle up to 10,000 users. So if you have a 20,000-user deployment and high availability is very critical for you, this is probably the way to go. Basically taking an enterprise edition, deploying 2 or 3 front ends, and then deploying standalone monitoring pools. One thing you'll notice over here in this figure is the mediation server is not shown in the topology because it is co-located with the front end pool. And if you have, one or more branches, you can deploy SBA in a branch. And the second branch, I want to kind of call out why there is no SBA there, is because if you have a resilient WAN connection, which basically means you have more than one network connection from the branch site to the data center, there's really no need to deploy a SBA. Your network resiliency should provide you the resiliency that you need, which is why the branch 2 has just PSTN gateway, but no SBA. You still need a PSTN gateway there in most cases, because if the branch over here is in Belgium, from an example perspective, the local DIDs for Belgium will have to terminate in-country. Typically, the Belgian telco will not terminate their local numbers to a data center in Amsterdam. There are SIP trunking providers that will do that, but if you have a regular PSTN connection, this is what you would need. This is probably a more complex topology when you have multiple data centers and multiple branch locations. So I'm not going to talk through the whole thing, but probably one point to note is over here. You see that I have a SIP trunk deployed in one of these data centers. And to kind of just reemphasize the point I made earlier, when you have a SIP trunk, you'll need a standalone mediation server. But this should go away in the future as the SBCs start supporting some of the forking and other SIP requirements. Yeah, so I'm not going to talk through this, but this kind of gives you an idea that, you know, from a topology's perspective, Link has a lot of flexibility in terms of deployment options to meet your particular needs from a business. I'm not going to talk through the slide in detail because Jamie covered this in quite a bit of detail in his earlier session. But the reason I want to kind of put it up here is when people deploy real-time communications, there is an impact on your network because every time I have to do voice, now it's going to go over your existing data network. When I want to do video, it's going to go through your data network. One thing that's not called out over here, which is actually even more impactful on your data network, is we have this thing called application sharing. And when I do application sharing or desktop sharing, so when I'm collaborating with another individual, depending on my screen resolution, I can actually be pushing, I may actually require a bandwidth of about, you know, like 400 to 2 megabits per second. And though there is a lot of value in you deploying deploying unified communications, you need to plan, you know, very carefully to make sure that your network is ready for Link and is ready for the workload that we're going to throw at it before you deploy. And, you know, I can cite some customer examples where when it's done right, it's, you know, works flawlessly. Sprint. Sprint is a large telco in the U.S., and over a span of about very short span, about a few months, they actually deployed Link Voice for all 40,000 of their users. And they actually did a lot of network planning and network assessment, and the quality that all the users are getting is like super high. And we actually did a survey of the customer satisfaction in Sprint, and they are very, very happy with their deployment. And there are other customers who've actually not done, you know, appropriate planning, and they deploy Link, and then they see that, hey, my users in this particular site are complaining about quality, the calls are dropping, and you don't want to get into that spot. So, you know, I think the call out over here to you is to make sure that you prepare, make sure your network is ready, right? So this kind of gives you, from our network planning considerations, we have actually, in the product, we built a lot of technology into the product so our media stack can adapt to changing network conditions. So if you start off with available bandwidth of, you know, 80 or 90 kilobits per second, we will use a higher bitrate codec. And as the network conditions deteriorate, we can actually adapt. So that is, you know, that's something that we built into the product, which you can leverage. But it's still important to, you know, the four steps that I would like to kind of call out from your network perspective is plan, depending on the number of users you want to deploy Link for, where they are located, what is the kind of workload that they have, you know, plan appropriately. Assess the network. See how your network is performing today. There's always this, I don't know how it's in Europe, but from organization perspective, in North America, we've seen that the telecom engineers and the network departments are typically different organizations. And you need to have the conversation with your networking team to make sure that the network, if they know of any particular bottlenecks from a network perspective, and share with them, you know, here's the bandwidth I expect to put on the network from Link, and get their feedback. And configure the network. But what I mean by configure over here is, so configure the network infrastructure for quality of service. So make sure that you prioritize your audio and video traffic so they get put in the EF queue, and that way your routers and switches will not be dropping packets. Anytime a packet gets dropped, and it gets dropped very frequently, your people on the other side are going to hear clipping, there's going to be choppy audio, and the experience is not going to be good, right? So I'm going to quickly switch over and show you a demo of this tool that we built. It's called the Bandwidth Calculator. And it's available for download from TechNet. So you just search for link bandwidth calculator. And it's a very complex Excel-based tool where you can input several things, and it'll tell you the expected load on the network. Sorry. The font may be too small, so let me see. All right. So this is a flowchart of what you need to do from a bandwidth calculator perspective. There are certain global parameters that you can configure, and I'll step you through some of them. I'll not spend too much time on the tool, but I'll walk you through enough of it so you have an idea about the capabilities. So there are certain parameters that you can configure. You define your central sites. So the central sites are your data center sites. You know, in which locations are you going to have your data centers? Then you can define your branch sites. So this is where the different locations that's going to be connecting to each data center site. Customize the usage models. What we have in the tool is a usage model that we've actually built based on data that we have from several large deployments. So if your if your user base has a unique kind of usage model where they may be using PSTN audio very high, or they don't use PSTN audio but they use data collaboration very high, then you can actually customize the usage model based on what you see in your user data. But make sure that you have data in terms of if you do some analysis on the link called detailed records, it'll give you an idea about the workloads that people typically use, and you can use that to configure and customize your usage models. Once you customize the usage models, you can actually customize the personas. So we actually, in the tool, we have about 10 personas. And what we've seen is, even if you have an enterprise that's 200,000 users, the profile that the usage profile of a user can be mapped typically to between 5 and 8 personas, but we allow up to 10. So you can actually define different personas. And once you do the personas, what you kind of do is you assign for each site. You can then say, in Amsterdam, I'm going to have 2,000 people who are very IM-oriented personas. There's going to be 5,000 people who are very conferencing heavy, and you input the data into this tool. So when I talk about some of the global parameters that you want to have, there's a few over here, but then I'll just kind of step you through the rest. So you can choose the display units for your bandwidth, whether you want it to be kilobits per second, megabits per second, or gigabits per second. And you can actually set thresholds where you can flag in red when the WAN usage exceeds a certain threshold. The reason the default is 30% is a lot of customers have WAN connections that are pretty big, but they use it for their business-critical applications as well. So they want to make sure that the bandwidth they allocate for link is an acceptable percentage, so it doesn't bring down the quality of their other mission-critical applications. And so in this example, you'll see that there's two central sites, and one is Amsterdam, the other is London. And from an editing perspective, the gray cells are computed cells, so you cannot edit them. And but as you enter data and other parts of the tool, it should auto-populate. So from a central side perspective, you define what is the WAN link speed, and actually there's a few things you can define. You define the number of users with particular profiles. And then once you input the number of users, the total over there will get updated. So once you configure central sites, you can actually go to the branch sites. For each branch site, you'll notice that there is a central site that is providing user services. By user services, I mean that that's a service that provides your presence and conferencing capabilities. So this is how you pair a branch site to a central site. So for example, in this example, the Rotterdam site actually is affinitized with the Amsterdam data center site. And you have a WAN connection between those two, and you can actually specify the bandwidth for that particular WAN connection as well. And in this example, the WAN link speed is 100 megabits per second, and the bandwidth allocated to RTC traffic is 50 megabits per second. So once you have this data, and once you input your network data, you can kind of go into the persona definitions. So actually, one point in the persona definition is you want to think about what's called concurrency. Concurrency is when I have, you know, 1,000 user deployment, at any particular time, how many of these users do I expect to concurrently make a call or receive a call or be on a PSTN call? So the values that we have here are, again, value based on a lot of data mining and analysis that we've done from a lot of large deployments. So the typical PSTN audio is, and this is again like a standard in the industry as well, when you have 1,000 users, you plan for a 10% concurrency, which means you may have like 100 active calls at any particular time. And depending again on your usage, you can change this around, and that'll have a direct impact on the bandwidth. So once you do that, you can actually go define your personas. And here we have some sample personas. And you can actually choose whether their IM and presence usage is going to be medium, low, medium, or high. You can actually, for a particular persona, you can say the peer-to-peer audio is going to be high. And all the workloads in Link that is going to put a tax on the bandwidth is actually captured over here. So you can define the personas that are appropriate for each class of users. And once you do that and you type all the data in, there's a very easy way for you to get a graphical view of, you know, are you ready in terms of the bandwidth required and bandwidth available. So if I can zoom in here. So in this site over here, you'll see that for Amsterdam, the bandwidth required is, 52,000 kilobits per second. And the available bandwidth does meet the needs. So to give you a quick demo, I can actually, for example, if I go back to the central sites, it was 52,000 over here. If I go to the central sites and say, like, 6 months down the road, you want to add, you want to enable voice for another 10,000 users. So if I just go here and I make this number 20,000 and I go back to the graphical results, you'll see this gets updated. So this is how, as you roll out Link, you can use this calculator to make adjustments. And as you deploy and continue monitoring your usage profile, you can actually make adjustments and then plan appropriately. Right? There's a few other tabs in here which gives you more details about the deployment readiness. If there's a particular site based on the profile you entered where the bandwidth exceeds the available bandwidth or it's over the threshold, they'll get flagged over here, and then you can work with your networking team to get it addressed. And there's a lot of advanced tweaking that you can do. So if you go to, I'll include a link of this tool in my deck, and you should be able to download it. And there's documentation that comes with the tool where you can make a lot of advanced adjustments if you choose to. So there you go. So I've just, now that we've done the bandwidth calculator, I've shown you the bandwidth calculator to estimate Link traffic. You can actually assess your network infrastructure. There are a lot of network assessment tools like that's done by third parties who will actually crawl your network and tell you hop-by-hop latency, right? Between router 1 and router 2, here's my available bandwidth, here's my latency, and here's my packet loss. And you can actually assess your network infrastructure using those tools. And I already talked about quality of service configuration. And actually, QoS configuration, one thing to note, which again we've observed in a lot of large deployments, is the configurations do tend to drift. It drifts because I set up a router, like 6 months later, somebody is making some changes to it, or they re-image the router, and the settings get lost. And then we start seeing issues. So in the Microsoft deployment, we've actually seen issues where about 2 years ago when you deployed it, everything was working flawlessly. Over a period of time, people have been changing things and people have been upgrading and the configuration has drifted. So now what we've invested in is tools to actually monitor these configuration drifts. And when a configuration drift happens, we get alerted and then we kind of go fix the particular network equipment. If you have a constrained link, consider deploying CAC. I would seriously recommend configuring CAC. CAC stands for Call Admission Control. It is a way Link allows you to define network links in Link, and you can actually decide that on this particular link, I'm only going to allow 5 calls, and the 6th call, you can choose a route over the PSTN. All right, so it's the CAC capabilities that we offer in Link is quite advanced, and it should help in bandwidth-constrained links. And then the goodness about the CAC support that we have in Link is that you do not need to configure CAC for all your network locations. If just the link between Brussels and Amsterdam is bad, you can choose to just configure the subnets between Brussels and Amsterdam for call admission control. And the last note, again, it's something to consider. If you have IPsec, we'd recommend disabling IPsec for particular ports that use audio-video traffic. And the reason is, the number one reason for quality issues in voice is latency. And when you have IPsec enabled, it basically delays the negotiation of the media ports. And we've seen that has a lot of impact on quality. So we have a lot of detailed documentation in TechNet about how to create port exceptions for IPsec. And one other point that I missed calling out earlier is we recommend the recommended value for end-to-end latency for the media path is about 150 milliseconds. So if the latency becomes very high, you're going to have a lot of delay, you're going to have a lot of clipping in the audio, and the default human expectation is humans actually operate very well in a very natural way if the latency is less than about 200 milliseconds. Once it goes beyond that, we start noticing. And when people start noticing and it's not good, they're going to complain to you. And then you're going to get asked about, hey, why didn't we think about this? So which is why the network planning is quite critical. Yes, you had a question about the 50 milliseconds. Average value. So that's a max value. Yeah, so this is this should be the average value, actually. So any questions on the network before I move on, because I think the next topic will be more about PBX interop. Okay, so I'll leave like about 5 to 10 minutes at the end for some additional questions. These are some features that we added in terms of that help specifically with interoping with PBXs or PSTN gateways. In the past, Link always used to convert a number to E.164. So anytime I dial a number, say I dial a number in Netherlands, I dial 31 something, it'll put a plus 31. But the local carrier over here may require us to remove the country code and just put a 0 in front of the national prefix. And there was no easy way to do this in Link. So you had to go configure each gateway to do this. And or even PSTN systems do not sometimes understand a plus because people do not dial a plus in a PBX phone. So, and their dial plan may just require a 0 followed by national prefix. And we have something in the voice routing where on a per route basis, I can configure translation rules that can change the number before going to the PBX or to the PSTN gateway. And the example over here is, if Alice is calling London using a gateway in Seattle, our local exchange carrier in Redmond, who is Verizon, doesn't understand plus because they are a wireline carrier. So we actually remove the plus and put 011. But at the same time, if we are calling London, using a gateway located in London, you'll notice that we remove the international, the country code, and put a zero in front of it because that's how numbers are dialed in the UK. So it's another simple feature, but actually if you think about it, when you have a large number of gateways, you don't have to go configure 30 gateways to do this this number manipulation. You do it in just one place, right? So that's the value that this feature provides. The second one is actually more interesting. The reason we did this is we got a lot of feedback from customers about when I interop with PBXs, and I have, you know, I have a 5,000 user company, I move 500 users to Link. Whenever the Link users call a user on the PBX, the PBX users see the caller ID differently than they used to before. And we want to make this migration very seamless. For example, most companies, when I'm calling an internal user on the caller ID, they just rather show the extension of the user and not the full number. So we provide some caller ID presentation controls which allow you to manipulate the caller ID based on the particular trunk that you're connecting to, right? So that's another, you can think of a simple feature, but it adds a lot of value. We got a lot of good feedback on this feature. I talked about Exchange, and one key takeaway over here that I want to kind of share, which is new in Link 2010, is with Office 365, there's a large set of our customers who rely on Exchange, in Office 365. So we did a lot of work in Link 2010 to make sure that if you have Link 2010 deployed in the enterprise, you can still work with Exchange Unified Messaging in the cloud. So we provide pretty much all the combinatorics should work. And even the administration of Link in terms of working with voicemail systems have been simplified in Link 2010, and it should enable you to, you know, get voicemail up and going a lot easier than before. So there's no more reliance on, in the past we used to rely on Active Directory, we used to kind of go through all the whole Active Directory objects, get all the Exchange UM dial plans, find the Exchange UM servers, and then connect to Exchange UM. But in the new model, we have the way we connect to Exchange UM in the cloud is just like how we do federation. We leverage our edge server to connect to Exchange, so it makes it makes the configuration very simple. And this is something that a few people actually asked me in the booth as well. We do support UM and Link in deployed in different forests. They don't have to be deployed in the same AD forest. So again, from a deployment perspective, if that's something that your enterprise may have, it may be worth noting. So from a Link telephony deployment, you know, most of our customers fall into one of these three buckets, right? There are customers that have truly bought into the vision of unified communications, and they're like, yes, we want to deploy Link, and we do not want to renew the maintenance agreement on our existing PBX, so get us to 100% running on Link as soon as possible, right? That's great, and that's where we'd like all of you to be. And then there's a set of customers, this is a more pragmatic scenario. This is what happens in a lot of deployments where they have a very complex deployment, hundreds of locations, and they want to still use Link for several locations, and they want to have a plan gradually to kind of migrate away from the existing PBX. So I want to connect with the PBX and coexist with the PBX in a seamless fashion, right? So that's another kind of bucket of customers. And there are customers who've decided to, you know, who've made investments in products like Cisco quite recently, and it doesn't make business sense for them to upgrade or, you know, deprecate their Cisco investment. So, but they love Link for IM and presence and data collab, and they may say that, hey, I'm going to keep my telephony on the PBX, but I want to leverage Link as a presence platform, which is fine as well. So, you know, in terms of how you can accomplish, if you fit into one of these three things, what are the things you need to do for each of them, right? So for replacing the PBX, you know, in terms of connecting with the PSTN, you have two options. You can choose to get a SIP trunk from a SIP trunk provider, and the industry trend today is, compared to like 2 years ago, we are seeing a very steep increase in the adoption of SIP trunking. And the goodness of SIP trunking, as you do your planning, is SIP trunking in the future will allow you to do more than just audio, right? Once I have a SIP trunk set up, it's an IP connection, so I can have a very rich experience with whoever I'm talking to. So SIP trunking, if you have a choice, I would recommend, you know, you should try SIP trunking. Or if SIP trunking is not available or it's not practical for your particular enterprise, you can choose to, have a gateway to connect to the PSTN. And the implications is everybody is using Link. They have Link phones. They have Link on the desktop. They have Link on the laptop. They have Link on the mobile phones. Link everywhere, right? The second option is if you want to connect to the PBX or coexist with the PBX. There's a couple of ways you can connect to the PBX. You can go direct SIP. By direct SIP, it basically means you can take a Link server and have an IP connection to a Cisco PBX, and it'll just work. We've already done the interop testing to make sure that we can interoperate with each other, and all the leading PBX vendors are supported. The other option is to actually get an IP PSTN gateway from one of our partners like NET or Audio Codes or Dialogic, and they will do the conversion from interworking between Link and the existing PBX. So if you have a TDM-based PBX from Nortel, from a BCS50, from several years ago, and you want to connect Link to that particular PBX, you can actually use IP PSTN gateway to do that interworking. And in this scenario, you know, you can choose to, for all your remote workers, people who are in sales, who are working from home, who are traveling a lot, maybe Link is a better solution for them because they don't have to be next to a desk phone. They're able to take their phone everywhere they go. And for more desk-bound workers, maybe they remain on the PBX. Of course, the last one, the net result is you're going to have like separate vendors for different parts of your UC stack, like voice provided by somebody, maybe video provided by somebody else, and then IM and presence provided by us. And it just adds complications in terms of support and maintenance. And the overall TCO, from some rough calculations we've done, is that it actually increases it by a significant percentage. I'll try to skip through this. Yeah, I think I've talked to all the points over here. So in terms of IP PBX interop, I want to do a quick recap of, you know, the pain points we had in the previous releases of Link, which was OCS 2007 R2. The main problem was in R2, direct SIP required media to be routed through the mediation server, right? In branches, when I have like 50 branch locations, deploying a mediation server over there is very painful. A lot of times in these branches, you do not have IT personnel. So deploying a Windows server over there, managing it, configuring it, and getting it right is very expensive. And if you don't do that, the media can actually trombone through the WAN if you deploy the mediation server in the data center site. And if I have a user on a branch site calling another user on the PBX phone in the branch itself, you're going to have your media actually go through the data center site, which can actually cause quality issues as well. So that was one of the main problems that we had in R2. And this is a visual representation of that, where I have PBX endpoints and mediation server. The yellow line is the media path, and the red line is the signaling path. You see both of them go through the mediation server. And then the cost of operating a server, a single server, actually per year, is about $4,000 or $5,000. This is including manpower and the hardware cost and everything else. So it adds up. In Link 2010, I talked about media bypass earlier, and I'll explain to you in more detail what it is. Media bypass is about the mediation server bypassing media in the sense that it will continue to remain a signaling path, but it will not terminate media. Anytime a component terminates media, it is an expensive thing because when I terminate media and I transcode, it adds jitter into the experience. And the media, when you have media bypass and a client, a Link endpoint calls another gateway, when you have media bypass enabled, the mediation server will basically, the way it works is the client will always send its SDP, and We have something called bypass ID, which is very location dependent. And we have the logic in the server to determine under what circumstances we want to bypass media. And we will bypass media only if the situation demands that media bypass will help in the experience. And I have a few graphics right after this that can kind of explain that. And one point to note is when media does not get bypassed, so if you enable media bypass, the client to gateway, the codec that will be used will be GSM-11. So again, going back to your network planning, make sure that you know you account for media bypass in your planning considerations as well, because GSM-11 is a higher bitrate codec compared to RT audio. And the last point actually is the one that I was referring to in terms of having a direct impact on the TCO, where it enables a very lightweight mediation and that allows you to co-locate with the same server as your front-end box. So when you have media bypass, this is a graphic view of how signaling and media flow. The signaling will continue to go through the mediation server, and the media will connect directly from the link endpoint to one of the gateways or a IPPBX as well. So there's two ways you can configure media bypass. You can actually say that I'm going to bypass always. There's a place in the link control panel where you can just check this box, and then it basically does bypass all the time, or something using a network configuration setting. By network configuration setting, so in Link 2010, we introduced the notion of network configuration, where I can classify a location into a series of subnets. So every location is identified by the subnet that's associated with that particular location. And the client IP address gets mapped to a subnet. And if the subnets of where the mediation server is located and the client is located kind of match, that basically results in media bypass happening or not. So this is the screenshot of where you do this in the link control panel, so you can just enable media bypass there. So from an inbound logic perspective, the way it works is the mediation server will get an invite, and it knows the IP address of the media gateway. So from the IP address, it can determine the subnet, and from the subnet, it can determine the location. And it actually takes, the mediation server will take the SDP that it received from the gateway in addition to its own SDP and sends it down to the client. The client makes a decision if the IP address and the subnet the client is located in matches the where the gateway is located in, the client will basically pick the gateway SDP, right? So that in a 10,000 foot view, that's how it works. So then that will result in media going directly between the client and the gateway. So for outbound calls, it's kind of similar, where the client will send its location and bypass ID in the SIP invite. The mediation server will determine the gateway's location right before routing to it. If it knows the gateway is the same location as the caller, it will take the client SDP. SDP stands for Session Description Protocol, and that's the one that is used for media negotiation. It takes the client SDP and passes it on to the gateway so they can negotiate media directly. So that's what media bypass is all about. So there's a list of all our gateway partners support media bypass, and you can get the complete list in the OIP page. OIP stands for Open Interoperability Program. So if you just search for Microsoft Open Link Interoperability Program, you should get the list of all the vendors that do support. So this is a set of graphics that, if you have an in-branch call between a link endpoint and a Cisco phone. So in this scenario, when you have media bypass, you'll notice that the media stays locally and goes to a Cisco media termination point, although the signaling actually is going to the link data center. So this is a very easy way for you to configure media bypass, and the media path will remain local. And the good thing about the advantage of this is even if a WAN connection goes up, and any active call will continue to stay up if you have this model, because the media is flowing locally. This is the scenario between for a link in branch and a Cisco phone that's in a central location. And this is where I think the media bypass logic I explained to you like a few minutes ago comes into play. When the link client makes a call, the mediation server determines that the link client is in a different location or has a different bypass ID compared to the gateway. So it is going to say, I'm not going to bypass this call. And the reason it is not bypassing this call is across a WAN connection, RT audio performs better than G711. Because RT audio, like I said, is a very adaptive codec. So on your WAN, it actually, first of all, it starts off as a lower bitrate codec. It consumes less bandwidth than G711. And it's got a lot of healing capabilities. So on your WAN connection, if things start fluctuating, RT audio will adapt to those conditions. But G711 is a fixed rate codec. So you'll start seeing audio quality issues if you use G711. And that is the reason why, we actually do not bypass if you're going across a WAN. So this is a branch call with local resiliency. If you deploy a link SBA and you have a link endpoint in the branch calling another Cisco endpoint, you'll notice that the media remains local and the signaling flows through the link server. So this is just it's a very high level kind of migration and coexistence plan. When you're working with Cisco, the way you configure, you can use the ISR as a gateway, and the signaling will go through the Cisco call manager, and you can have direct connection between Cisco and Link. So there's a lot of details in our documentation portals in terms of how you can coexist with different PBXs. And this is just a sample thing. And this is a slightly different variation where I have multiple sites. A typical connection when you have a Cisco deployment. And because Cisco, actually, one thing to note is the way Cisco gets deployed is Cisco deploys its call managers in a central location. And they deploy what are called these media termination points in distributed locations. And so the graphic over here kind of represents how Link can be deployed to coexist with that kind of a deployment and still leverage the MTP for media bypass. You know, the key takeaways from our IPPBX interop is integrating natively, can allow for a low-cost proof of concept. So if you want to start off your migration with, say, 100 users, you don't want to be ripping and replacing any equipment yet. What we just talked about should kind of help you get up and going very fast. And the one thing you want to make sure is people in your enterprise have a very seamless experience as they go through this migration. In terms of the people who are not migrated should not be able to tell, hey, why is the behavior when you call me different than before? So you want to make sure the experience is kind of seamless. And you also want to plan for long-term coexistence. What that means is if you want to think ahead in terms of 3 to 5 years from now, who do you want to be as your signaling or media hub? And plan your network and your session managers appropriately. Right. And with media bypass, there are a few benefits where you can actually start off without any additional hardware. You can actually have a CPE-less deployment in all your branch locations. And again, I don't want to reiterate the media path optimization. But anytime the shorter the media path, the better the quality. So you want to always get the best, the most optimal media path. So I'll spend a few minutes talking about the link video strategy. Video is actually rounding the curve in terms of adoption. Over the last couple of years, use of video in meetings and in peer-to-peer sessions is actually growing very dramatically. I know like 15, 20 years ago, we used to have these video phones, which never really took off. But I think now is when the world is ready for video. And enterprises are using video more and more often to have a very connected experience with people. A lot of people work remotely these days. And if I participate in a meeting when I have video on and I'm remote, when I participate in a meeting when I don't have video on, my attention span is very different, right? When I have video on, I know people are watching me, and I need to be professional. I need to be focused. But if I don't have video on, I can very easily get distracted. And so overall, it does help in productivity as well, right? So we at Microsoft truly believe that video should be a very high quality experience, which is why Link does support high definition video, and it should be at a low cost. We don't want to have solutions that requires hundreds of thousands of dollars to have a dedicated room to set up video. We want it to be a very natural experience that's available on every desktop. At the same time, we also want to make sure the meeting room experience is actually quite powerful as well. We want to make sure that we can interoperate with any existing meeting room systems, because a lot of customers have made investments in video conferencing systems from Tandberg or Polycom and have meeting rooms set up for that. When you adopt Link, we want to make sure that a user in Link can participate in one of those meetings and vice versa, right? So there's two main approaches that we have in terms of video interop. So we have what is called a direct registration. Some of our partners actually do this today, where the VTC endpoints actually appear as local contacts in Link, and they can actually register with Link directly as well. And so all the multi-party mixing for this audio-video call happens on the Link audio-video conferencing server. So in this model, the Polycom endpoints, Polycom is one of the partners who's built these native endpoints, just look like any other Link endpoint, where I'm able to ping them, talk to them. So I go into a meeting room, there's this video conferencing, video phone sitting there. I'm able to just call somebody and have a video conversation with them, just like I can call Link. And there's some of the partner names over there. And in terms of interworking with existing video systems, our partners like RadVision and even Tandberg, now they're no longer, I don't know, since Cisco bought them, they still offer video gateways which can actually interoperate with any video room system. And the analogy I draw to our video interop is very similar to a PBX interop. We, just like in SIP interop or for PBX interop, we can have a direct SIP connection to a PBX or have a gateway in the middle to mediate. That's the exact same model for video. And we do acknowledge that the ecosystem for communications is, quite broad and rich, and that we need to have a story to be able to work with every system out there. And between these two models, we have a very good coverage across all the different video conferencing systems. I actually want to do a demo of connecting to a video room, but I had issues connecting earlier, so unfortunately I cannot. But we have videos of how our video interop work, and I'll see if I can include a link to that in the slide deck, so you'll have access to it later. So with that, so we're about 10 minutes to the bottom of the session. I thought I'd just do a quick recap. Link 2010, I think, supports a variety of topologies. It's pretty much like you, depending on your business needs, you can pick the right level of topology, the right combination of deployments to meet your business needs. And although Link has a lot of very powerful technology to adapt to your network, I just want to reiterate, make sure that you plan and assess your network thoroughly before deploying Link to a very large number of users. If it's a few hundred users, probably the traffic will not matter, but when you go to the scale of thousands, that's when you start seeing an impact. And in terms of interop, there's a few features we've added, and the other voice features together should provide a pretty rich experience from a voice perspective. In terms of IP PBX interop, Link 2010 offers a lot of flexibility in terms of the connections. Our direct SIP ecosystem has increased, as well as media bypass can help you lower TCO. And in terms of video, we have a pretty good strategy in terms of native integration with several of the video solutions, or interop through a gateway, right? With that, I want to thank you for taking the time. I know it's been a long week. You guys must have a lot of information floating through your brains. So thanks for taking the time to attend this session. And I would seriously and very sincerely appreciate any feedback that you have. So please do take the time to complete your evals, because that'll kind of help inform us about the quality of my presentation, the quality of the content, and we can make adjustments as we go forward. So thank you, and enjoy the rest of the day.